It is 8:36, and we hereby call to order the House Committee on Environment and Land Use. And we will be following our agenda, so we open a work session on House Bill 2431. Committee, we, I guess, are in the extraordinary class of receiving a direct communication from the Oregon Supreme Court in regards to amendment on this bill. So that is the amendment we are going to be considering this morning. You have it as a -3 amendment. And if the committee would like a few moments to take a look at it while our administrator describes basically what the amendment covers.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there's several things that the Oregon Supreme Court wanted to address in the -3 amendments. The first issue is extending the time for to 21 days of the denial of permit for the request for a hearing to the director. 21 days, my understanding, gives the court more time to go ahead and look at issues that need to be issues, and then appeals from the director's final order may be taken to the Court of Appeals in a manner provided by law. It requires the director to use an independent hearings officer to conduct any hearing on a disputed case, and that hearings officer is required to be appointed from the hearing officer panel established under Oregon law in 1999. At the hearing, the director, under the Supreme Court's amendments, has the burden of proof to show that wetlands are on the property for which the permit is sought, the mitigation required is reasonable in proportion to the functional attributes of the lost wetland, exemptions under current statute do not apply, and then it also requires a hearings officer to issue a final order containing findings of fact and conclusions of law. The hearing officer's final order, again, is subject to judicial review by the Court of Appeals. And then it goes on later on in the bill to require a decision by the circuit courts to be subject to appeal to the Land Use Board of Appeals, or not subject to the Land Use Board of Appeals. Those decisions that are made within the judicial system, according to this amendment, stay in the court system. So you have a disputed case that goes to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals decision is subject to review by the Supreme Court under the current law. In each court, in each case where the court compels the director to take an action required by statute, the court shall award costs and reasonable attorney fees, if any, to the prevailing party. There are some substantial changes that are suggested by the Supreme Court, Mr. Chair.
Representative Zahner.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the -3 amendments to 2431.
Representative Zahner has moved the -3 amendments to House Bill 2431. Is there a discussion?
Discussion.
Representative Richards.
Am I correct that the amendments are not just the black language, the bold print, but everything that's in quotes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, that is correct.
Then I have not had the opportunity to read these amendments, so I feel at a loss to vote in favor of them unless I've had a chance to read them.
Okay. Any other committee member feel the same way?
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to read the amendments. Are we only changing the procedural, or are there substantive changes here?
I believe this is just a procedural change suggested by the Supreme Court.
I'm satisfied with the procedural changes, but I just want to make sure I'm not changing something else.
It is the intent of the chair to name a work group that will take this bill along with this amendment for a couple of weeks to take a look at it and refine the bill and bring it back to us with some changes that may be needed. So This was this amendment, because of its origin, I felt it was important that it be included in the entire package of the bill that this work group will look at. But if the committee wishes that we hold off on the Dash 3 until the work group returns, that's also an alternative for the committee. Any other discussion? Representative Rosenthal.
Mr. Chair, it would make sense to me that if we are sending the bill away for refinements, given that this is a pretty extensive amendment, that we just defer action on the amendment to the work group coming back with a recommendation.
Okay. I see agreement to that. So, would you rescind your motion, Representative?
Sure. Mr. Chair, I'd like to rescind the Dash 3 to House Bill 2431.
Representative John R. rescinds the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2431. Is there any discussion? Any objection? And we will kill the motion. And I will, as of this point, announce that I'd like to have a work group formed that will work on this bill. That work group will be chaired by Nick Coffey, and it will include Phil Scholes, Dick Nowitzki, John Lilly, Mel Stewart, and Dan Doyle from this panel. Work group, I'd like to give you about 3 weeks to work on this bill and then return to the committee with your recommendations. Is there any further discussion by the committee? Representative Ackerman?
Yes, I think there was some discussion during the public hearings that there was an amendment floating around, perhaps brought up by one of the witnesses, regarding the definition of assessed value on line 12 of page 1 of the bill. I would hope the work group would try to refine that so we know whether we're talking about assessed value for tax purposes or assessed value pursuant to an appraisal or some form of market value, so we tie the definition down.
Mr. Coffey here. Let's see. Okay. I know John Lilly is here. John, could you come up just for a moment? And if you would, make a note
Chair, John Lilly, Assistant Director for the Division of State Lands.
Good. I would just like you to make a note, John, if you would, for the work group of Representative Ackerman's request that it be included in the directions to the work group. Any other committee members feel a specific area that they would like to have reevaluated and looked at? Representative Greenman.
Yeah, I was confused by, I think, what was section 2 that talked about actions instead of a permit in some of the language, but in other places it seemed to be actions as a part of an application for a permit process. And it seemed to me it would be very useful to have a clear sense of apply for a permit, here's a permit process. Now here are a set of actions that may be alternatives you can suggest in that permit rather than instead of a permit process. And I think that's what was intended, but the language was, I think, a little ambiguous.
I think the bill wants to see, John, if we can streamline this process, make it easier for people to get on with business and et cetera, and a little less paperwork and a little condensation of time, et cetera, so condensing the time. Representative Richardson?
Mr. Chair, along with what you're suggesting, I think that we need to make sure that the wording is such that a department cannot drag the time out by continually saying the application may not be complete for some reason, but then there needs to be time restrictions. And there was one provision in the bill that said that if the applicant has given all that he can give, that be accepted and that it not be within the hands of the department to drag this on because it's not complete.
It's a very good recommendation, and Mr. Lay, I hope you'll take it. Representative
Yes, I concur that recommendation. I had to smile because I was doing a very simple partition in the city of Eugene, and the questionnaire, I think, had 114 parts in it, you know, and if you don't check everything exactly right, they keep ramping it ahead, because it's not complete. So I think the vice chair makes a good point. I think also, Mr. Chair, I'd like the work group to consider the values specified in Section 2, 75% of whatever assessed value is, and a $20,000 per acre. In light of testimony, that may not be sufficient under the circumstances, or should we have another way to evaluate that process?
Also, we have included on the work group Mr. Mel Stewart, who also has an amendment, which we will forward on to you. We actually have, I think, a dash 4, which includes both Mr. Stewart's amendments and the Supreme Court's amendments. But we'll give each of all of those to you, John, and let the work group sort things through.
Okay.
And I would ask that the work group return to this committee on April 8th with its recommendations. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, we will close the work session on House Bill 2431 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2362. Mr. Administrator.
Hello, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2362 repeals statutes regarding the threatened or endangered species of wildlife. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in the background section, what I've done is kind of giving you a history of the state's Endangered Species Act, along with some statistics regarding the dollars and jobs that have been affected by the state's Endangered Species Act, Mr. Chair.
And we will call Jeff Merrick, Jennifer Flynn from the Audubon Society. Committee, we have 6 guests to testify on this. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I'm Jennifer Flint, the Audubon Society of Portland. I'm here to introduce Jeff Merrick. He's an Audubon Society of Portland member, and he is taking a sabbatical from his law practice right now to focus on environmental issues in Oregon, and he's participated in a lot of the testimony on some other bills of interest to the Audubon Society of Portland, and we're glad to have him here today to speak to you about our concerns. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and committee members, thank you. I'd like you all to think about last night.
Excuse me, you need to identify.
I'm sorry. My name is Jeff Merrick from Portland. I'd like you all to think about the last time you saw a bald eagle, or the last time you paused along a stream in an ancient forest and smelled the green, and how you felt at that time. And I know for me, when I see that or feel that, my heart soars, and I just thank God I live in Oregon. I'm seeing all these assaults now on what makes Oregon, Oregon, and I think we need to take a hard look at them. Because I think most of the people who live in Oregon and the voters of Oregon want to preserve the environment as much as possible. Why do we have these laws, these Endangered Species Act laws? It's because we want not only to see the animals, but we want to benefit from them. One-fourth of all our prescription drugs in this country, the active ingredients come from plants. The genes of plants, and we need there are values besides prettiness and the good feeling it gives us to keep wild gene pools. Unfortunately, I didn't have an opportunity to see what was just referred to about the economics of the Endangered Species Act. Usually when I see those kind of economic analyses, they omit the values, the positive values of protecting the environment, such as tourism. You don't see too many tourism dollars going to Gary, Indiana, or places like that. And so I think you also need to keep in mind those kind of economic factors, and I don't know if those are factored into your economic analysis. Regarding the bill itself, it is not duplicative to have a state and federal Endangered Species Act. There are species that we protect in Oregon that are not protected on the federal list. For example, thinking about the bald eagle, President Clinton was going to delist the bald eagle a few years ago, and political things kept that listed. If that had gotten through, we wouldn't have a protected bald eagle in Oregon. We'd have to get in, go up to Alaska to see a bald eagle. I think we in Oregon want to keep track of what animals we want to protect in Oregon, because although they might be robust elsewhere, they might not be robust here. The other...
John? Excuse me.
Yes.
You brought up the subject of the bald eagle, which happens to be a very prominent fowl in my Klamath Falls area, which is probably the home of the bald eagle in Oregon, and happy to announce that the bald eagle is recovering very handsomely, and we have more bald eagles today than we did 5 years ago. So I'm quite sure you're aware.
Good news. Glad to hear that.
I find myself awkward telling you that.
Well, no, I'm just, like I say, I'm just getting into this myself, sir, and I'm learning as I go. One of the things I've learned is about liability for state and local governments under the Federal Endangered Species Act, and how one of the things this bill does is to repeal the laws that allow and require the state to monitor things, monitor species, and to work with other agencies and to prepare rules to protect endangered species. Now, whether or not there's a state endangered species law, there's going to be that federal law. And if we are not complying with the federal law, we are going to be subject to liability under the federal law. There's a case, for example, on the books where a local government got sued because they allowed four-wheel drives to drive in plover territory on a beach. And if we're not out there monitoring these things, any potential cost savings for, and I don't know if this is in your cost calculations that has been prepared, but what about the cost of defending ourselves if we're not doing this work later? Maybe we'll save a few dollars in the with biologists today, but we'll spend a lot more dollars on lawyers later if we're violating the Federal Endangered Species Act, and we're likely to do that if we're not monitoring things because it's we repealed under this law. The other thing that bothers me about this law is it repeals our right to get the information that we already have. It makes an exemption under the Public Records Act all the data that's been collected so far. All the data that we have on Endangered Species Act and habitats, that's all locked up. I don't know why, but it's locked up under this bill. And maybe they're thinking, well, we don't need that provision if everything's repealed. Well, maybe for the future that might be true, but if there's no data being created, there's nothing to request in the future. So I think this idea of exempting, locking up all the data that's been collected for the last 100 years on habitats and species, I don't see why that we should do that. And I'll just close by saying I'm proud to be a member of the Audubon Society of Portland. We have 10,000 members, and it's just the tip of the iceberg of people in Oregon who really love the environment, who are here because they love the environment. And I just hope that you all will continue to love the environment and kind of beat down these bills that keep trying to attack the environment. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Merrick?
I have two.
Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Merrick, you indicated that if bald eagles were delisted, we would have to go to Alaska to see bald eagles. Is it your position that if they're delisted, that they would be annihilated?
No, sir. And I wasn't aware of how robust they are in the Klamath Basin. I'm just giving an example. The point there is I think we want to control what we protect in Oregon, whatever the species might be, whether they're listed or delisted by the federal government. I think we want to be able to control what we care about in Oregon and not leave it to the people in Washington, D.C.
Okay. And similar vein is your comment that we need to make sure this doesn't go through because there was a lawsuit about against four-wheel drives being on a beach. Are you making the position that somehow this would control whether or not a citizen has a right to sue?
No, what it does, I think, it creates the opportunity that we will be sued, because if we take away the authority of the state to monitor habitats and to monitor what's going on out there, things are going to be going out there, and the first notice we're going to have is a lawsuit by somebody who says, hey, this federal endangered species is being threatened by this practice. If we're not proactively out there watching things, we're going to get kicked in the pants later when somebody else notices it, and that's already too late.
Any further questions? Mr. Merrick, I might mention, obviously, I come from an area that's been heavily impacted by the Endangered Species Act. Mm-hmm. Protection can be carried to the point where we need to evaluate the economic input on a community in regards to the Endangered Species Act. And I'm making direct reference here to the suckerfish. You know I had to this morning. I couldn't let you out of here. But we do need to, while the Endangered Species Act, I believe, is a good law, it does need to be looked at and amended and perhaps changed in some areas in regards to its neglect of its impact on people.
I know that's a view shared by a lot of people, and I know in the federal statutes they've got the God Squad so they can distinguish a species if they deem it important to do so. But I don't think Oregon should get out of the business entirely of trying to make those judgments.
Well, I don't think the God Squad is called into action too many times in that regard. I think the last time was, about 5 or 6 years ago, and it's only been called into effect 3 times since its origination. So that isn't something that small communities that are impacted by protection of a specific species can certainly call upon to have the President of the United States pull the God Squad into reverse an endangered species. It just isn't done very often.
You know, that's true. That's true, Mr. Chair. And you know, I appreciate that people are hurting, and it's and we do need to have reasonable actions. But I think we also have to look at what are our values and what do we stand for. And honestly, let's face it, these endangered species in some ways are surrogates for our entire environment. They're the canary in the cave. And you know, and do we want to have these values in Oregon?
And I think that's how the debate should go. I particularly put a value on the new endangered species in Oregon, and that's farmers. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Farmers.
I'm going to ask the bill's sponsors, if I could, Representative Greg Smith, along with Glenn Stonebrink of the Oregon Cattlemen, who sponsored this bill. Gentlemen, I apologize that I did not have you lead off this morning.
I was late getting here, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Chair Gerard, Vice Chair Zahner, Vice Chair Richardson, members of the committee. For the record, I'm State Representative Greg Smith. I represent District 57, which encompasses Union, Wallowa, Umatilla, and Morrow County. I only want to just take a moment and let you know why I've introduced House Bill 2362. If we step back and think about what do we as a body have an obligation to do, our Constitution provides us with a very solid roadmap of what that is. Our Constitution requires us to perform certain functions, and we all know what those are: public safety, funding our schools, providing for the welfare of general welfare of Oregonians. However, nowhere in our Constitution does it provide that we should take valuable financial resources away from those missions and put them into protecting a species or a list of species that are already protected by the federal government. I'm truly of the opinion that House Bill 2362 removes duplication, and that is the state's endangered species laws, and allows the state of Oregon to be covered by our federal endangered species laws. And that is why I've introduced 2362. I understand that there's much debate that will center around this issue, and I think that's positive. I think the way we move the state forward is by having this type of discussion. In my neck of the woods where I live, my communities have been devastated by the overzealous protection of species that, in one way or another, have garnered more support than, as you said, Chair Gerard, another endangered species, and that's the farmer. In my neck of the woods, we're dealing with species that the locals do not truly believe are endangered. And let me give you a case in point. We've got a Washington ground squirrel, a squirrel that has prohibited the development of some of the finest farm ground in north central Oregon. And I have to tell you, in north central Oregon, there's not a lot of good farm ground. And the fact that this squirrel would prohibit that is detrimental. Now, when I go back and talk to the farmers who have been on this land for, or their families have been on this land for upwards of 150 years, they share with me that they could not burn, poison, bomb, run over, shoot, starve, chemically pesticide these squirrels out of the area. And yet, we're being told that they're endangered. About every 4 years, they come out of their hibernation, and they come out, and they are everywhere. Then they go back down underground. The locals know this. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and the folks who were doing the studies on this issue didn't have that same opinion as the locals. So I think House Bill 2362 is a good move for the farmers and the cattlemen and those folks who harvest timber throughout all of Oregon. It'll allow the state to move forward. It'll allow us to help jumpstart this economy. And perhaps most importantly, from my perspective, Mr. Chair, it'll bring common sense back to the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Any questions of Representative Smith? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Mr. Stonebrink.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Glenn Stonebrink. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. And on this bill, I also represent the Oregon Hay and Forage Association. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Representative Greg Smith stole a little of my thunder, but I wanted to just reiterate one thing. I have a seventh grader, a granddaughter who's in seventh grade, and she's decided that she wants to be an attorney. And at her school, that's just about all they talk about now is the cost, the cuts at school. So I found one of my old blue books, and I gave it to her and pointed out in the Oregon Constitution where it says that it's the state's obligation to provide for education. And I said, you take that back to your school, and you talk about, and then you talk about the things that are not in the Constitution. And basically the same point that Representative Smith made. I actually appreciate sometimes not going first, because you do get to hear some of the opposition statements, and I just kind of want to clear up a couple of those for the record. There was mention of a lawsuit against the state because the state did not virtually carry out the Federal Endangered Species Act. That's totally incorrect. The state, federal government cannot obligate to do anything except those things that are specifically spelled out in the U.S. Constitution. Now, if the state allows the take of some species, in other words, it says it's okay if you take it, but the federal government under the Endangered Species Act prohibits it, that individual is still just as liable under the federal law as if the state didn't say they could take it. So while there could be a contrary, something in conflict, but this bill does not do that. This bill simply removes the State Endangered Species Act. Now, that may sound a little bit radical, but that's the sole purpose of this act, is to remove the duplication. And under the state's budget shortfall, I think it is time to give serious consideration to any legislation that will reduce government spending. This particular bill, or any other bill that can reduce duplication, needs to be given serious consideration. What I want to talk today is just about that, of reducing state spending. And in 1995, Representative Tarno, at that time, offered an amendment. And I want to repeat the words. I actually was going to plan to play a tape, but I thought maybe it'd be expedient to do this. But he says, the bill, referring to the bill at the time, what it tries to do is just get our state out of the business if the feds, under the Federal Endangered Species Act, what the feds are involved in listing these species. So he wanted to reduce. That was the purpose of his amendment, which passed, by the way. And here's what his amendment said, in part, the critical part. the commission, meaning the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission, may determine not to list a species as a threatened or endangered species in any of the following cases: if the species has been listed pursuant to the Federal Endangered Species Act of 1973. Now, this language is very, very clear, and to grant the commission that authority to remove, doesn't have to say delist under scientific information, it says to remove the species. And yet, out of the 36 species that are listed in previous testimony by ODFNW, out of the 36 wildlife species that are listed in Oregon, 27 of them were grandfathered in. Now, grandfathered means that a portion of the, it's in my testimony here, that means that the Oregon, when it wrote its Endangered Species Act, put in that they that we had to automatically list all species that were at that time listed under the federal act. Now, because the commission has this power under the so-called Tarnow Amendment, and when fish and wildlife folks come up, I would hope someone would ask them, does the commission ever consider removing any of these? As we have petitioned them to remove, and that, and they've been told, I'll cut them some slack, they've been told by the Department of Justice they can't. But I think at the minimum, that's a conflict within our own Endangered Species Act. The other thing that I wanted to mention, the previous testimony that said that the public, that this would eliminate the information that's been gathered for 100 years. Well, first of all, the Oregon Endangered Species Act is not 100 years old. And that information is obtainable. Any public records are obtainable. There's also testimony that a large percent of our prescription drugs comes from endangered plants. When you think about that statement for a moment, if a species is listed as threatened or endangered, you can't take it. You can't use it. So if you list it, then it's not available for prescription drugs. Because both the federal and the Oregon Endangered Species Act require documented and verifiable scientific evidence about the species' biological status before they can be listed, this is totally duplicative. You have to pass the same test to get a species listed on the federal list as you do on the state list. And finally, I wish to bring your attention to the Oregon Endangered Species Act itself, that I think favors the abolishment of this act, in which that our act says the burden of protecting and recovering threatened species and endangered species can be a significant cost to the citizens of this state. And it is therefore the policy of this state to minimize duplication and overlap between state and federal laws dealing with threatened and endangered species. Because of the budget crisis that are facing all of us, and you in particular, minimizing duplication in this case, as the Act tells us we should do, would be to eliminate the Oregon Endangered Species Act and reduce the duplication to zero. I'd really strongly support or ask for your support on this bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Representative Green.
Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, Chuck.
I read the Blue Book as well. It's even online now. I find it. But I guess I want to understand the basis for your argument. I understand how some of our laws can be crazily applied. I think we all have our poster list of laws that can be crazily applied, but your basic position is anything that's not in the narrowly construed context of the Oregon Constitution, we shouldn't have any laws about? Is that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, what I believe, and especially in this time when we don't have enough money to pay for everything we want, that there is something that we need to do, and that's go back to the Oregon Constitution and then look at all of our laws that cost or require government spending and put them in a sieve and sift out those things that we absolutely need that are required, first of all, by the Constitution. Secondly, what do we really need? And it's my belief the role of government, whether it's in the Constitution or not, is to first deal with those things that the public absolutely needs but cannot or will not do itself. So what I'm trying to get to here, sir, is to say that those laws that are needed by, that are required by the Constitution are fine. Those things that we feel are absolutely necessary, second. And then finally, those things that we want if we have enough money. But to answer your question specifically, I think every law should pass the Constitution test. I really do believe that.
So let me follow up. So you'd be in favor of abolishing things like tax breaks for the cattle industry, as an example? I mean, and I don't mean to pick on you specifically. It's just that there are, I mean, we do a lot of laws for a lot of reasons because the citizens of the state want them. And I was just wondering if your underlying basis is that, I mean, we ought to look at such things like tax breaks for the cattle industry because I don't think it meets any of the criteria. And I don't even know if there are any tax breaks for the cattle industry, although my guess is there are. But would you apply that test to...
Mr. Chairman, Representative, there, I guess you could say tax breaks for the cattle industry might be things like farm deferral on their property, that type of thing. That's not prohibited by the Constitution.
Well, neither is this prohibited by the Constitution. You're saying we ought to... I'm sorry, sir.
Follow?
Yeah. I mean, you're saying that the reason we should do away with the Endangered Species Act is because it's not required by the state constitution and because it has a cost attached to it. And I'm just wondering whether we should be carrying that argument. I mean, I'm on two committees, three. I hear a lot of bills. Most of them aren't required by the Constitution. Most of them have some cost attached to it, but we do it because the citizens of the state think it's worth doing. It's from how far do we take this argument?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, when the citizens of the state, let's say through a referendum process, want to do something, and suppose, I'm going to get ridiculous with an example, but suppose they said that they want to take the lives, they want to take all of your lives of the members of the legislature, well, that's against our Constitution. Even
right.
though the citizens of the state may want to do that. Now, that's a democratic society that the majority rules. We live in a Republican form of government, which is required, actually by the federal government, that we have that when we wrote our Constitution, that there are certain things that you can't do, the people's right or the government's obligation. So I guess what I'm saying is that that we first look to what is required by the Constitution. I really don't know how else to answer that. Is it required by the Constitution? Is it allowed by the Constitution? But most importantly, what we're talking about here is not that we don't like endangered species. Can we afford endangered species? Is there another law that protects those same species? And in fact, the federal law, the Federal Endangered Species Act, covers all the land in the state of Oregon. The Oregon Endangered Species Act only covers the lands owned by the state of Oregon. So if we're looking at the strongest of the two laws, it is the federal law that protects that. And it's extreme. I mean, it is tough. There have been many attempts to change the Federal Endangered Species Act, even to get the word verifiable science into it, peer-reviewed science. And it's tough to change it. So it's not going away, and it protects the same species. So the basis of what I'm talking about here today is that if we can look at those things that are duplicative between federal and state, and it can save money, why not? It still has protection of species.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ackerman.
Yes, I had just one point of inquiry because the witness was brought up you know, the financial impact of this bill, but our write-up in our file does not indicate this has any revenue or fiscal impact. Wondering, Mr. Chair, how we can straighten that out. I don't know what we should know what the fiscal impact of this bill is, for the record.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, I have a notice of no revenue impact. I have not received notice from the fiscal office as to a fiscal impact. What we're looking at on the preliminary staff measure summary is literally preliminary notes on what's going on. As time goes on with this measure, we'll get a better idea on the fiscal impact. But as I said, currently I have no notice either way. And where it says no fiscal impact on the preliminary, that's just a form that comes out on the computer. And until I get a definitive answer, I can't finalize that. Nor can I say with confidence, yay or nay.
Then let me ask the witness one question, if I could. This constitutional analysis is pretty interesting, but wouldn't it be your position under either constitution, state or federal, that under the general welfare clauses that the legislature has a discretion to, in its tax policy or its social policy, to enact the Endangered Species Act, as well as grant tax breaks to, say, the agricultural community? As long as it can give those breaks, isn't it just as logical it can take them away?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that the general welfare clause is very big, and it virtually you can put anything under it. My point was, in comparing it with schools, is that it's not required. The Endangered Species Act to protect species and wildlife and plant is not required. And if it was really important to the founders of either constitution, I believe they would have listed that. They listed many other things, including both of them, the Bill of Rights, which granted the rights of the people. And so I guess the point we're talking about here is that I agree with you. Yes, the general welfare clause allows you as lawmakers, to test society and say, society, what do you want? The point I was trying to make is the needs are the things that are focused on in the Constitution.
Committee members, you might recall that we have had testimony on two other bills, one of them almost identical to this one from Representative Jensen, which we've heard public testimony on, and I think that was 2458, 2468. Those bills are still awaiting an amendment from Representative Jensen. So we have, this will be the third bill involving the Endangered Species Act, but I remember in testimony during the hearing on that one bill that when the state of Oregon investigates an endangered species listed by the federal ESA list, that the federal government contributes about 75% of the cost, and the state of Oregon pays about 25% of the cost to investigate a federally listed ESA. But the average cost was somewhere between $50,000 and $100,000 per each endangered species listed by the state of Oregon. And I'm just bringing that up merely as a, if my memory is correct, as some kind of fiscal response to Representative Ackerman's questions.
Mr. Chair, if I might, in my recall of the Federal Endangered Species Act, the 75% clause refers to the recovery of those. And I think what's very important here is that the Attorney General's office has ruled on a specific particular species, but I can't understand why it doesn't apply to all 36 species, wildlife species. That when a species is listed in the state, you can't just sit there and say it's protected. You must expend funds to do something to work towards recovery of those species. And when that happens, and if that's the way it's going to rule, and there's no hiding the fact that the reason this all came about, and the reason I know about the Endangered Species Act is because of the gray wolf. And yet, the gray wolf has been determined to be extinct by the Department of Fish and Wildlife. It's also listed as threatened or endangered. I can't remember which classification. But how can you have something listed as threatened and endangered and requiring recovery when it's also extinct? Those two don't match. And the power for the commission to simply remove it or any other species is within Oregon law, and they will not do it. And the Attorney General's office saying, and you can't just sit there in case of the wolf, you're going to have to do something to recover it. Now, the latest figures I heard were somewhere from other states is between $200,000 and $2 million to do that. And yet it's protected, fully protected by the Federal Endangered Species Act. Now, I'm just trying to get something that can bring some sanity to this issue and reduce cost. There is going to be a cost if we don't, and there's going to be savings if we do. If we don't remove it, there's going to be additional cost. If we do remove it, there will be savings.
Any other questions of Mr. Stoneberg? Seeing none, thank you, Glenn.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
Your testimony this morning. And we'll call on Les Hegelson from the Native Fish Society.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
My name is subject for this hour in the morning.
Yes, it's one that I feel reasonably qualified to testify on here. For the record, my name is Les Hegelson from Beaver, Oregon. I'm here representing the Native Fish Society. We're an organization of roughly 340 individuals who are dedicated to the conservation of native wild fish and their habitats. This is a particular issue of concern to us. We do feel the State Endangered Species Act does have utility, and we strongly support it and would oppose this bill. The State Endangered Species Act is not duplicative entirely. I've recently been asked to look for a particular plant species. Personally, my professional background is in botany and forestry. And I think a good example demonstrating the lack of overlap here with the two, the federal and the state acts, are concerning a plant called the Henderson's checker mellow, Sedalcia hendersonii. And it's a plant whose range is from California up to BC, roughly Vancouver Island area. And the plant is sufficiently abundant in California to preclude a federal listing. It's on the federal watch list. But it is, as far as we know, almost extirpated from the state of Oregon. Historically, going back to the turn of the century, there were, I think it was 10 or 11 populations confirmed by collectors on the coast. It's a plant that inhabits the marshlands. It's a unique habitat. And currently, there's only one known existing site in the state of Oregon with less than 100 individuals. So this is a case where the state act could apply and provide the necessary protection to this very rare species, and the federal act just doesn't do it because there are populations elsewhere. So I would like to emphasize that there is a difference between the federal and the state act, and I think most of the problems, particularly down in the Klamath, are attributable, if you will, to the federal law, not the state listing. So I would strongly urge you to not move this bill any further. Thank you very much. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions of Mr. Hegelson?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Sorry I can't read the last name, but I know you. So I'll just say Roy. And Martin Nugent.
Mr. Chair, we have some prepared testimony that I'll paraphrase briefly, and then we can move right on to questions. And Mr. Chair, you're quite correct. We've heard two other bills regarding the State Endangered Species Act. The department currently is still working with Representative Jensen on amendments to one of those bills that hopefully we'll have some language back to him by the end of this week. We've been working closely with Legislative Council. In fact, Legislative Council and myself just met with Representative Jensen just yesterday afternoon to get some clarification on how he'd like us to proceed, because we've been reviewing some of the legal issues and kind of gave him an update where we were. So we are working on those amendments now. Again, for the record, my name is Roy Elker. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. On my right, Mr. Martin Nugent, the Program Leader of Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife's Wildlife Diversity Plan program, and that's also responsible for the State Endangered Species implementation. Just briefly, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, to my prepared testimony, the Oregon Endangered Species Act was created in 1987 by this legislature to prevent the decline and extinction of Oregon's native fish and wildlife species. Focuses on state-owned and state-leased land, which or land which state has recorded easement. And it has several major points. First of all, it gives the commission discretion on whether or not to list a species as threatened or endangered based upon the best available data. It also, under 496-176-6B, Oregon Revised Statute, gives the commission discretion to list or not list species already on the federal list, even if it's a federal candidate or sensitive species under the federal act. And third of all, it's an important vehicle, the department feels this is an important vehicle for the commission to identify risks to state species, promote recovery efforts, direct coordination and cooperative efforts between state agencies, and establish partnerships with the federal government to recover or listed species here in this state. Under this bill, we feel that the state would lose an important legal tool to manage its threatened and endangered species by taking away the lead the state can play in recovery efforts. In some circumstances, the state listing of species can provide the opportunity for the commission to take a lead in recovery species, prevent the need for a listing under federal ESA. Representative Smith did bring up the example of the Washington ground squirrel. It did have some impacts due to the large amount of state land in northeastern Oregon, but ultimately almost 100,000 acres of that land was sold into development for agriculture. Another 19,000 acres was granted over to the Nature Conservancy because of the Washington ground squirrel. So it has had impacts over there. However, again, I think I speak for the chair of the commission, or at least some of the commission members, in feeling in some ways that there was a petition to the federal government, and the federal listing did not take place, we feel, because the state took action on the species. And with a federal listing, you're never sure how that would have came out or what impacts that would have had. So, again, the state was able, we feel, at least to take the lead in recovery efforts here and prevent a federal listing. At least it's not been listed to date. Another key benefit of the Act, it serves as the cornerstone of the Wildlife Diversity Program. And we feel by having a system that allows the state to monitor and classify its wildlife puts us in a much better situation for federal funding for these kinds of programs to help these species. Three programs are what we call the federal ESA Section 6 monies, and then two brand new Bush administration programs, the Federal State Wildlife Grants Program and the Federal Landowners Incentive Program. All three federal programs, which are essentially administered by the United States Fish and Wildlife Service, provide substantial funds, particularly the newest two, to private landowners, particularly under the Federal Landowner Incentive Program, because the federal government is looking more and more to not get into listing of species. So it feels by providing funds to private landowners or other conservation groups or other entities that will help these habitats where these species are found. By funding those kinds of programs, they will not have to move into listing. Now, how that helps the state is by having a state ESA that allows the state to figure out what species are at risk and what need to be monitored, puts us in a much better situation to apply for these funds and compete for these funds against other states. And these two new programs in particular, Oregon so far is looking to get, I think right now under the State Wildlife Grant Program, I'm told that there may be as high as $2.4 million. We might be able to get four state efforts under that. And then under the LIP program, we just received, I think, another $1.4 million under that program under federal allocation. We haven't applied to the legislature yet for a limitation, but those are examples of how Oregon's been successfully competing for these new federal programs to help sensitive and endangered species. We also feel there's some benefits to the Act by raising public awareness to native species, prioritizing research and monitoring needs for state species, and establishing a formal scientific review of limited species every 5 years. In summary, again, the Department feels that in some ways, it's regarding Oregon's fish and wildlife, the proper course is for this state to take the lead of its species recovery. It increases the likelihood of preventing the need for a federal listing that could have a far greater consequence to public, private, and federal lands. In addition, the Act itself, the State Act, serves to identify risks to species, promote recovery efforts, and act as catalysts to acquire federal funding for species recovery efforts in this state. Department appreciates the opportunity to provide the committee with these comments. Questions, Mr. Chair?
The Chair would like to thank you, by the way. It's the first time I think the committee's seen a list of the endangered species in Oregon. I appreciate you including that in your presentation. Any questions for Mr. Elip? Representative Doyle.
Thank you. Do all states have their own state ESA?
Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, most states do have some form of a state ESA, but not all of them. And we could provide more detailed information for you on that, if you'd like.
I would.
Okay.
And I guess I would kind of look to how are they competing for those federal dollars if they don't have as extensive an ESA as we do.
Okay.
The summary of your presentation states that the sacrifice means recovering species whose populations on state lands are severely at risk. How do you deal with that with the birds that are transient and see whales and sea otters that are not on state lands? I mean, how do you try to recover those if the purpose is that it has to have some focus on state land?
Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, I may let Martin Nugent provide part of the answer, but I wanted also to remind this committee of previous testimony by this department, and part of the reason work with Representative Jensen is there are some issues with the State Act, even that we would like to see some changes. Part of it has to do with our ability to delist some of the species, like the bird species or whales, that just occur here part of the year. That has been a problem for us. I wanted to make sure the committee remembered that we had brought that up earlier. Martin, would you have some comments here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and my name is Martin Nugent for the record, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, the answer to that is that there are some species that are found not exclusively but predominantly on state-owned lands, and that gives us the opportunity, if those species are listed, to bring about recovery of those species on state lands through the mechanisms of the present Act. Where there are other species, migratory birds you indicated, and there are other species too that may occur across the state on different land ownerships. And the state can and does work with other entities, including the federal government, to bring about recovery generally. So it's the contribution that we can make there. There have been examples on state land on Department of Forestry managed properties, for instance, where we have been working on recovery efforts, getting some basic biology understood to start with, and moving towards recovery on state lands. And that is in partnership very much with Department of Forestry, and the equivalent work being done on federal lands on Forest Service properties too. So it's rarely that the state or indeed the federal government can just do things in isolation, but in partnership with state federal government and with the private sector if they choose to, that can also add a valuable contribution to recovery efforts.
Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Elicker, what portion of ODF&W's budget is expended in some facet of implementing or working on Oregon ESA?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, when we get into budget issues, what I would prefer is provide more detailed information. If the question is what portion of our budget's on ESA, I don't have those numbers off the top of my head, but would provide them to the committee.
Okay, I appreciate that, because we're not getting fiscal numbers, and yet that's part of what is at issue in all of the things that we're considering throughout every committee in the state at this time of revenue concerns.
I will provide that information, Mr. Chair, and Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Roy. Representative Greenland.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to understand what the impact of this bill would be, and in order to understand that, I'd like to understand a little bit more if you'd guide me through what DFW does in a variety of issues. I mean, if we didn't have this bill disappeared, you would still be able to cooperate with the federal government on working on species and a variety of things.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, do you mean if the law disappeared or the bill disappeared?
No, I mean if the law disappeared.
Okay.
I mean, I'm trying to find out what the consequences of abolishing the state ESA in terms of actual output, because my understanding is this bill only relates to state lands per se, not to other kind of ranges, not to private land, not to the Washington ground squirrel on a farm. I mean, so if we did away with this bill, I was just probing the kind of things you could or would still do. And one of those things is you could continue to work getting federal grants and working on state and other lands with the federal government on dealing with environmental species, I mean environmental protection and restoration. What wouldn't you be able to do, or what wouldn't be a part of your mission? And that probably gets to the budget question. What would you be freed up of if the state Endangered Species Act disappeared?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, let me take a shot at this. I may let Martin finish it, but my sense is by not having an act of any kind, first of all, we would be able to still apply for grants, and we would essentially be working at the federal government's behest on a number of issues. In other words, they would still provide some funding for us, provide some level probably of working with them on federal species. But I think you will find that rather than us coming in as a partner, and particularly with our ability to list animals on our list and to be almost not quite an equal, but I guess a partner, it'd be pretty much you'd have essentially the federal bureaucrats, whether it's the Portland Regional Office of NOAA Fisheries or NIMS or Nice Fish and Wildlife Service or other D.C. people. You'd essentially have them kind of running the show, is my sense. They would be saying, here's what you need to do. We'll fund you to do this and this and this. I mean, that's my sense of a career in fish and wildlife management, is that you're much more, the feds are going to come in, and as far as arguments on private land or public land, the Act applies across the board. The Federal Act applies across the board. We have no alternative. We have no alternative to say, well, what if we did this? What if we listed the species on the state list and worked on state land? Would you might back off on some of your federal aspects or not list it on the federal list? We've lost some bargaining power there now because we have no alternative. They're going to list it, and we're going to kind of go down the road with that aspect, and I think that's what you lose.
If I may follow up, Mr. Bell. But much of your work in fish and wildlife is about maintaining habitat, dealing with helping fish and wildlife appear here, so at least for one reason, so they can be hunted. I mean, if this law went away tomorrow, my impression is you'd still have lots of work to do that you would do under your budget, and some of it would relate to endangered species, some of it would relate to non-endangered species. I mean, I just am not sure how this would take away a huge burden of financial activity, and that's what I was trying to probe at. So what would go away?
Mr. Sheriff, Senator Greenlick, I guess you're right. We have plenty of work to do whether or not the Act is there. That may be the easiest way to describe that. As far as financial burden, I don't know. I wouldn't say that this Act and how we work under the Act is a huge, tremendous financial incentive for the department. I mean, it's not like this dwarfs the rest of our budget or anything like that. I mean, most of our work is not taken up on endangered species in the department, frankly. And if the law went away, then, like I said, I think you'd lose some flexibility and some other issues between us and the federal government as far as resource management. But I can't certainly say this guy would fall in if the Act went away, financially or otherwise. I'm not sure how.
No,
I'm not sure how.
Is that answered?
Okay.
Any other Representative Ackerman?
Yes, if this bill passed, would you anticipate then that there would be greater federal preemption or greater federal activity in this area in Oregon?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, yes, sir, I would.
Thank you.
It's a good question, Representative Ackerman. I get the general feeling that of the two endangered species lists that we deal with, it might be more advantageous if we could somehow get out of the federal ESA and not the state ESA, but I don't think that's possible.
Is that where the sucker is?
Yeah, it's everywhere. Yeah. Any further questions? If you would get us some of that financial, that fiscal impact information, we would appreciate it.
Happy to provide the information for Representative Doyle, sir, and the other for Representative Greenlake and yourself on the fiscal.
Thank you, Roger.
Sure.
Thank you, Martha.
Thank you.
Warren Ady and Stephen Kafori.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Kafori. I'm here today representing the Wildlife Society. As you recall, the Wildlife Society is a scientific society of biologists. We are not an advocacy group. I did want to make one thing clear to the committee a little bit in a general term. You'll get some details from Mr. Elliker, and that is that the OBF&W is funded hugely by restricted funds, hunting and fishing licenses, and poundage fees. The amount of general fund that it has left to do things like endangered species is extremely minimal, a terribly small portion of the budget, and we're in danger of losing the rest of that this session. So the dollars that are involved in this is not the issue. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the issue of whether the state should be involved in protecting species is a political decision. It's a policy decision that the legislature should make. We don't pretend to get involved in policy matters. We are scientists and resource managers, and we can tell you if you decide not to do it, fine, we'll bow out. If you decide that it is a policy of the state of Oregon, that it's important to protect endangered species, then I think we can tell you a little bit about what the best way to go about doing it would be. So as I say again, we want to stay out of the policy matters, but in terms of the management and science matters, we want to help the legislature, and so Mr. Haney is going to talk about that.
Good morning, Chairman Garrard, members of the committee. My name is Warren Haney. I'm a professionally certified senior wildlife ecologist with over 40 years of experience in my field, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon chapter of the Wildlife Society, which represents more than 500 wildlife professionals in Oregon. As we understand, I think it's been pretty well defined that the House Bill 2362 would repeal Oregon's threatened and endangered species statutes as they pertain to wildlife. However, this bill would also remove from the public disclosure exemption, as we read it, information regarding the habitat, location, or population of any threatened or endangered species. I think I heard a previous interpretation that was just the reverse of that. I think the intent of the bill is to remove from the exemption information about these species. They are currently exempted under statute from public disclosure. There's a reason for that, which I'll get to in a minute. Also, it would not change Oregon's threatened endangered species statutes as they pertain to plants. So it would just change it as it pertains to wildlife, including fish. Wildlife management provides an array of programs to protect wildlife in Oregon. For species that are abundant and vigorous, the proper response is to monitor the species' habitat and its population status, the relationships to other species and to other resource values, and then manage that population to balance the species with its habitat and with other competing resource values. For species that are depleted, proper management responses would include habitat improvement, maybe transplanting or artificial propagation, maybe reductions or elimination of harvest for a period of time, and other active management measures that would tend to that would work to increase population numbers and recruitment. For species that are at risk of extinction, we need more severe and rigorous management measures. Management measures that would provide for special protection and recovery programs that are planned and implemented under the State Endangered Species Act, and these special programs often include state, private, or federal sponsorships, including funding. Removing the state's authority to classify and manage wildlife species as threatened or endangered takes away a leg from the stool of sound wildlife management. Without the tool of the State Endangered Species Act, Oregon would not be would be unable to provide timely and effective responses to protect a number of Oregon wildlife species. And the Washington ground squirrel has been a poster child several times already today, but it's currently classified as threatened under Oregon statutes. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife was able to preemptively study proactively study and determine its habitat conditions, determine its population status, and work to list it and protect a vital segment of the population and a vital piece of habitat that was on state managed lands. This took place of, in advance of, and in, as it turns out, in lieu of federal classification of the species. There are other species that also fit into this category in Oregon, such as the wolverine and kit fox, which are state-listed but not federally listed. Since Oregon provides little funding for management of most threatened or endangered wildlife other than fish species, having the authority to manage threatened or endangered species under state law provides an opportunity for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to leverage research and management funding from other sources, both public and private. When I was a regional manager for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, the vast bulk of our budget, I'd have to guess, but in excess of 95% of our budget came from license and tag fees. And this was what we used to manage our program. A very, very small part of it came from the general fund or from the tax checkoff, which allowed us to do some work with threatened and endangered species as well as other non-game wildlife species. Since then, since my retirement, the department has been able to secure federal funding to increase its effective management and research that it does involve threatened and endangered species or sensitive species. But this funding is not a result of increases in the state budget allocation. It's a result of, as I understand it, funding from other sources, both public and private. Also, regarding the one on public disclosure, the state also needs to retain the authority to exempt certain information on listed species from full public disclosure. This is necessary, we found, in order to protect individual animals, nest sites, or critical habitat from the very real threat of vandalism or sabotage. There's also a problem in our relationship with federal agencies in this regard. The Oregon Natural Heritage Program is a cooperative state, university, and federal program that acts as a repository of information on sensitive and listed species in Oregon. For example, the Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, has provided a substantial amount of important species information to the Oregon Natural Heritage Program database, and then the Oregon Natural Heritage Program provides this information to agencies and individuals, land managers, who need to know this information so they can properly manage their lands or other resources on their lands in a way that will not harm these listed species. Since this information is in state custody now, it would become open to full public disclosure under this bill, which has a number of people concerned. And finally, removing the state endangered species statutes, you've already heard this, but I'd like to emphasize the fact that taking the state out of the endangered species business removes the leadership role that the state should take in preventing species from becoming listed, and it should take in restoring those species that are listed. It tends to send the message that federal listing is the only way to go, an action that puts both state and private lands in line for even more federal restrictions than they would get under the State Endangered Species Act listings. Thank you for the opportunity to present our perspective on this bill. We'd be available to provide further information if needed.
Any questions for Mr. Haney or Mr. Kavori? Representative Greenwood.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to continue to follow the train I was following before about what this law does, because it's very helpful to the extent to which we understand it. If I have a farm, and the farm is, say, right next to the boundary of a state forest, does the power in that we're proposing to eliminate here. Give the state any authority to talk about how I deal with ground squirrels, the Washington ground squirrel? I mean, is it under this specific act? If this act disappeared, if this bill was passed?
The reason I'm hesitating is that some of these questions are up in the air and need clarification. As I understand it, right now, on your private land, you could pretty much do what you wanted to. If you happened to be running cows on that state forest land next to you, you would not be able to do whatever you wanted to on that state forest land. But as I say, I'm a little hesitant because the question is up in the air.
But there have, Mr. Chair, Representative Green, there have been some cases recently about whether state agency permits fall under this, and that's an area of a little bit of unclarity right now. So if you were into private property next to the forest and you needed to build a dam on that property and you needed a state permit, and potentially that permit, if you built a dam pursuant to that permit from the state agency, it would have some impact on the animals, then there might be some state leverage, and that's the issue when Mr. Rainey says it's unclear right now. That has not been resolved.
Yeah, follow. But under general circumstances, I have a farm somewhere, and the Washington ground squirrels are driving me crazy every 4 years when they come to life. There might be something in the federal. I'm not asking about that. But this bill that affects the state's action on state lands would not affect my action on private lands if there were no state-specific interests. Is that
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, that's absolutely correct.
You would not be bothered, by the way, Chairman Girard, Representative Greenlick, you would not be bothered only every 4 years. You'd be bothered every year. They come out of hibernation every summer, or every spring, I mean.
Yeah, they eat off my bird feeder, but I can. But that's probably not the Western Ground School, I imagine.
I would hope not.
Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kafouri, Mr. Aney, I appreciate you mentioning about the division on funding, but I just wanted to make sure that Mr. Ehlecker understood the reason that I wanted to have that information is that we have a responsibility for how money is received and how it's spent, regardless of whether it's general funds or other funds or fees, because it all comes from the citizens, either directly or indirectly. But certainly the fact that it's not general fund money has an effect on current budgetary considerations. But still, the money is the citizens' money. It needs to be carefully spent and occasionally needs to be looked at to see how much things are costing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, we appreciate that distinction. We don't think that any government money should be spent without careful scrutiny, and we understand the Ways and Means Committee looks at all monies, federal money, state money, other monies when they make budgets. We're merely responding to the assertion that somehow if this bill were passed, there would be a lot of money available to go to schools, and we don't think that's the case.
Representative Girard, Representative Richardson, I can attest directly, though, that the availability of federal funding does provide jobs in Oregon, because I helped provide a crew that did surveys on the Washington ground squirrel using a combination of federal and state money.
Mm-hmm. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to get a little more clarification on the public disclosure provisions of the bill, because it does look to me like what we're doing in this bill is deleting most of the exemptions that protect information from public disclosure. But can you just tell us a little more about why these things are not subject to public disclosure right now? It sounded like it's part of the protective function of government to prevent damage to the species. But
yeah, Representative Girard, Representative Rosenbaum, there's a couple of reasons for that. I mentioned vandalism. There is a very real possibility that federal agencies and state agencies recognize that if, let's say, a spotted owl nest site was made a matter of public record, that somebody might think their definition of public service is to go out and destroy that nest site. And since they nest in large old snags, that would be a loss of a nest site that might be hard to replace. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
Representative Donner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So is this the swan thing here coming? was wondering about, someone said you could handle whatever you got on your land your own way, and I had to what if we sunset the bill for 4 or 5 years to see if it did in fact make a difference? And because we don't seem to be able to settle any argument here, I don't think we'll ever get a consensus. What if we put a sunset on it for 3 or 4 years?
Mr. Chair, Representative Zahner, that's a political decision that we don't want to get involved with. The issue, as I said before, is if you want to protect species that are in the state that may be threatened, that's a political decision. If you feel that there are other values more important, then you are the body to make that decision. The question of what the impacts would be, we can talk about, and the impacts we think have been pretty well explained, that there would be federal intervention. To an extent that our state agencies would not be able to follow the law right now. And the way the law works is that state agencies, which are state land-owning managers, ODF&W if they own land, state parks if they own land, for example, those state agencies have to make plans for their state lands on what they're going to do to protect those species. Those actions, if this law were to be passed and we put a sunset on for 4 or 5 years and had no state ESA, then those state agencies would stop taking those actions. We might have some animals go extinct in that period of time. We might have some animals go extinct in the state of Oregon that would still be living in other states. And that, again, is a policy issue, whether you think you want to preserve animals that are living in the state, regardless of whether they're living in other states. That's not a question we want to get into as a policy issue.
I find it very interesting, however, that we're beginning to protect so many species that it is the protection of one is now beginning to affect the protection of another. And I bring up waterfowl again in my neck of the woods, Klamath Falls, which happens to be on the major flyway, and no one in this room loves going out and watching those birds more than I do. Yet the refuges where these birds use as a gas station on their long flights were given water 2 years ago during the water crisis in the Klamath Basin at a priority lower than the farmers, and thus we lost a lot of waterfowl that may or may not have been on the endangered species list. But I find that the endangered species list, unless it's accurately applied, can affect actually things that it really doesn't want to affect in the same manner.
Thank you.
Law of unintended consequences.
Consequences. Our administrator, Mr. Kelly, wanted to clear up a point that I think some of our questions have been aimed at.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'd like to clear up or clarify the distinction between the State Endangered Species Act and the Federal Endangered Species Act. The state ESA applies to actions of state agencies on state-owned or leased lands only. The Federal Endangered Species Act can affect federal, state, and private lands. So where the federal act is very, very broad in scope, the State Endangered Species Act is quite narrow in comparison in scope and application. Mr. Chair.
Any other questions of our guests? Seeing none, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
We have our final person signed up, and that's Greg Addington. It's the Farm Bureau. Committee, we've had the real luxury the past couple weeks of taking our time on some of these more intricate issues, but I think the time is coming for us with an additional 40 bills heading our way that we won't be able to take as much time and look at some of these issues as in depth as we have been able to. So we're trying to take advantage of every moment we have at this point to further educate ourselves. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you. For the record, I'm Greg Addington. I'm Associate Director of Governmental Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau. I'm sure you've heard by now that the Farm Bureau is the state's largest general agricultural organization. We thank you for the opportunity to be here and comment on House Bill 2362. Mr. Chair, I will not pretend to be an expert on this issue. I'm relatively new to the legislative process. I have been with Farm Bureau for about 7 years now, and prior to coming here recently, I lived in Southern Oregon, where I worked with 10 county farm bureaus in that area, including the chair's home county of Klamath. So I think what I can give you is a good idea of how our members feel about this issue, and there's no question that we're in strong support of House Bill 2362. Our members view these statutes as unnecessary, redundant, and a way to streamline the state government. Too many times our members have seen environmental laws that are used not as a mechanism to improve habitat or conservation of a species, but as a tool to remove people from the land or to restrict its use. As you know and have heard, federal law trumps anything that we do at the state level for a listed species. The timber landowners and the farmers and ranchers of the Klamath Basin can attest to the thoroughness of the federal act. The federal act sets the minimum requirement for listed species management in the state. In other words, as long as a species is listed federally, state management activities must be at least as restrictive as the federal requirement. In looking at the state ESA list versus the federal list, I tried to compare the two lists and find out what the differences are. And I won't swear to this number because it was hard to kind of compare, but I came up with six fish and wildlife species that were listed on the state list but were not on the federal list. The Oregon Act requires the conservation of a listed species and defines conservation as the use of methods and procedures necessary to bring a species to the point at which the measures provided under the Act are no longer necessary. Such methods include research, census taking, law enforcement, habitat acquisition, habitat protection and maintenance, as well as propagation and transplantation. And I'll disagree a little bit with committee staff. There's a recent memorandum from the Department of Justice, and it came out, and it specifically was pertaining to the wolf issue, but the implications were with the State Endangered Species Act. It was dated January 31st, 2003. And it stated that when the legislature enacted the Oregon ESA, they amended the statute to prohibit, with certain exceptions, any person from taking or attempting to take any threatened or endangered species. And to quote the assistant AG, this prohibition applies to any person and to all lands in Oregon, both public and private. So the questions that our members have are, you know, what are the costs associated with the statutes now? With a little bit broader interpretation from the Attorney General's office, what are the potential costs associated with these statutes? And finally, what is the potential liability to the state? In other words, how long before the state starts being sued for not listing, not managing, not surveying, etc.? The state law is duplicative and redundant. We see this as an opportunity for state government to streamline without losing its effectiveness. And to refer back to earlier testimony, too, I'm amazed always that by suggesting any kind of change or a different way of doing things, that it's considered an attack on the environment. I think it's no secret that the majority of the state's wildlife lives on private land, and there's good reason for that. It's good habitat. I honestly believe that no species on our state list will be any worse off if this statute goes away. And with that, I urge you to pass. Please support House Bill 2362, and we'd be happy to try and answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Arrington? Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Greg, are you at all concerned about the possibility that by losing the ability to protect species at a state level, we might make it in some cases more likely that the federal government would intervene and we wouldn't have had the opportunity to do anything to prevent a federal listing, which might have a greater impact than if we'd taken action at a state level?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I think that I've thought about that, and I think the federal government is going to do what the federal government is going to do. I think that the state, having the state list does not preclude the state from taking any kind of a positive action. And a case in point is the Oregon Salmon Plan. I don't think that the Oregon Salmon Plan had a lot to do with the state ESA. And the whole purpose of this Oregon Salmon Plan was to take these state actions to improve habitat, conserve a species in order to avoid a federal listing. And we're here 6 or 7 years later, and to this point that hasn't happened. We are listed, salmon are listed, the coho. So I don't know if that answers your question, but we haven't seen that be a big benefit to us to this point. Now, I mean, the example of the Washington ground squirrel was brought up, and I honestly don't know. I mean, I just think that we can take actions regardless of whether we have these statutes or not.
Thank you.
Any further questions, Mr. Addington? Representative Richards.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Addington, I appreciate you bringing up the clarification as far as takings is concerned, because there seems to have been some miscommunication by prior testimony. And so I went and looked it up while you were coming up. And I'd just like to say for the record that ORS 498026 says, "No person shall take or attempt to take any threatened species or endangered species of any anywhere," and that's private or public lands. And in Oregon, taking means to kill, to possess, or to control. And then as far as what can only be done on public lands, that's where management and survival ability and those kinds of plans, where the government takes a proactive approach toward enhancing the future of these endangered or threatened species, they do that only on public lands. But the taking language applies to all of Oregon.
Mr. Chair, if I might, and to kind of, I think it goes back to Representative Greenlick's question a little bit. The way I read that then is regarding, say, the Washington ground squirrel. The state government, as Representative Richardson said, may not be on private land managing, telling them how to manage their land for habitat for the ground squirrel. But it is the state's responsibility to prohibit take on private land. So what, as a farmer, what does that mean? Does that mean you cannot pull a plow over the ground in, you know, ground squirrel habitat? So, I mean, that's a real concern for us.
I think that's exactly what it means.
I would agree.
But if I can ask on that?
Representative?
This doesn't relate to the state list, does it? It relates to any wildlife. Or is it only on the state list? In other words, would this go away if the state list went away? Or is this 498026 related to the state or the federal list?
Well, may I respond? Mr. Chair, Mr. Greenlick, an Oregon statute cannot control or preempt a federal statute. And so it could only really relate to the Oregon list, because it has no power or authority over the federal.
Yeah, but a taking amendment could prevent taking of something that's on a federal list. And the real question is, which is it?
Well, I have...
This is, for example, about taking about crippled or helpless wildlife. I mean, this is about essentially a hunting statute rather than an endangered species statute.
Why don't I could show him a copy of a January 31, 2003 memorandum from the Department of Justice that refers to these.
That's exactly what I'd like.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Addington, very much. I would also like to draw attention to a statement in our SMS that I have a little problem with. It says that Hal Radke, a natural resources economist, estimates that the loss of fisheries in the Klamath Basin has resulted in a yearly income loss of $32 million and 1,600 jobs. I would suggest that you will not find too many fisheries in the Klamath Basin. So whoever put that in there probably needs to reevaluate their points of information, because there are no fisheries in the Klamath Basin, and there was no loss of $32 million or was there a loss of 1,600 jobs? That's way out there. Any further comments in regards to House Bill 2362? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on 2362, and committee Thursday we'll really start to work on trying to move and take a look at more of these bills as they're assigned to our committee, and we'll perhaps lose the luxury of being able to take a morning and just educate ourselves on the Endangered Species Act. But
I need to get to work, huh?
I know I've appreciated those people that testified, and we've tried to remove some of the redundancy, but the major issues that this committee deals with are environment and land use. And I think we've spent a lot of time and good valuable time in learning as much as we can about those two issues. So I thank the committee for their indulgence, and I thank those who have testified before so far. We appreciate it very much. And we will adjourn the House Committee on Environment and Land Use meeting.